My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Welcome to a new week in a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. Thank you for coming back and listening again, or if this is your first episode randomly in the middle of my feed, thank you so much for trying it out and checking it out. Just a conversational podcast, having some fun, and asking a different question, a different topic to a different guest each week for just a short and sweet conversation, and that's it. We have some fun and hopefully create some interesting dialogue that gets yourself thinking. But this week we've got returning guest Rusty Shackles. He's an illustrator and a developer extraordinaire. Been on the show a few times before, but this week we answer a new question. Well, I say new, but it's been on the list of potential questions people can choose from to answer, but not a lot of people pick it. So I'm glad that he chose this one for this week. But we discuss some of our favorite illustrators and designers within video games. So we don't really get into the weeds about a specific game per its mechanics or gameplay, but more around the visual design or the presentation of it. So this was a fun question. I knew it wouldn't get answered too often, but funny enough, in an upcoming episode, you'll actually hear Andrew Elmore answer this. So it's fun that it's just coincidentally been picked pretty close together after being on the list for a while and getting not a lot of love and attention. So after the break, you'll catch Rusty and I chatting about that, and hopefully you enjoy that. But otherwise, business as usual. You can check out pixelsandpolygons.net. We've got to the latest issue of Retro Game Zine, which as of this recording's release should be end of July, if you're listening to this brand new. Yes. It should be. My calendar should be good. That means the Final Fantasy Mystic Quest issue is the current one, but in a few days you should have access to the Blaster Master issue, featuring featuring contributors in that issue. Actually, it's just one for the Blaster Master issue, but it's a big one. Mike Drucker recently released his own book, Good Game, No Rematch. If you've not seen or read that, it's all over my social media, at least. Check it out. I read it. I loved it. I enjoyed it. And he's a comedian, and his writing is just fantastic. It will make you laugh. It'll even make you tear up. But just a bunch of personal stories about his life growing up and coming of age and how video games have kind of always encompassed the stories and major life moments in and around his life. So take a look at it. Check it out. It's all over the place. There's, Amazon, places like that, but even like an audiobook version of it. So however you consume your books, check it out. It's got my huge recommendation. But he's in the Blaster Master issue with a cool contribution. The 32-bit library books should be getting restocked. I'm packing up some to take with me to the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. So if there's not any then, they should be restocked shortly. Or if you've been considering it, you should grab them now. But they are there on pixelsandpolygons.net. In addition to that, you can find the digital books over on my Patreon, patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop. Everything's pretty cheap for the digital copies, $3 for the zines, $5 for the 32-bit library books. I try and make it pretty fair because it's just a PDF file you're downloading, but you can still enjoy it and read it and see everything that other people get in paper. Working on 32-bit library volume 5 or the greatest hits volume, whatever I end up technically labeling it, it's being worked on. And I'm rounding out the final two issues of the year for Retro Game Zine before the next year starts, and maybe some changes with that. So we will see. I think that's all I got. I know it's kind of like the same stuff every month, but it is the same stuff every month. But that's what I'm working on. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm using this space for. I'm trying to promote myself. Y'all, if you have supported me, thank you. If you haven't, consider doing so. Consider sharing and sending some links to some friends or family members who might be into games like that. At the very least, for the podcast itself, if you are enjoying it, consider liking and reviewing and rating it on whatever podcast platform you're on. Honestly, that stuff helps. There's a bajillion video game podcasts and things out there, but the more ratings and reviews and things that it gets, the higher it is on some suggested algorithms and maybe you should listen to lists, so that would help, and that doesn't cost you a thing. So if you do enjoy what you're listening to, consider it. Otherwise, that's all I got for you. After the break, come listen to me and Rusty chat, and then we will see you next week. Thank you all. Have a good one. Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I think that's an appropriate description. I think this is a conversation, right? I mean, yeah, that's the appropriate subtitle. Anyway,
the dialogue option. Yeah.
Back again, we've got Rusty Shackles, great artist, creative, fun person, even developer at this point, we can now say, officially, you know, you've got that latest project in the works and everything. But yeah, Rusty, you are back on the show again. Hello.
Hello. Yes.
What is the last game? I guess, no, I shouldn't say that because I don't know when the time of the release will it be. But what is the next, what's the next game you're looking forward to? You know, big or small, like what is the next thing you're looking forward to playing? Even if it's already released, but it's in your catalog, you know, to catch up on and all that stuff.
Yeah. Probably Death Stranding 2. That's the big one. I've already pre-ordered it. I pre-ordered digital because I don't know why, like, it's gonna sell out. I've seen the 10-minute recent trailer. None of it made sense, which excites me because it's going to make sense eventually. But like, Kojima is just like playing game jazz with me. Like, I'm going to figure it out or I'm not. And I really enjoyed the first one. People were like, oh, it's a walking simulator. I'm like, cool. You heard that joke too. Get a new one.
Yeah.
But it's like, once you get like 2 hours into Death Stranding, you get a bike. It's like, all right, come on. Yeah. But yeah, it's just the.
Let alone the zip lines. I mean, my zip line train was like all over the place. Like, I was good. I can get anywhere on that last map, like, super easy. Like, my feet weren't touching the ground.
Right. That one is just, that just looks stunning, looks amazing. I can't wait to see, I can't wait to not understand what's going on, which is the highest compliment I can give him. It's borderline Lynchian, like how he, there's something there I'm gonna have to read a Wikipedia to understand, and the gameplay is gonna be, like, you know, very addictive and rewarding. I'm sure of it, so.
Yeah, I also, as well, that is the same game on my list, nice. For sure. I bought, the original Death Stranding came out. I bought the collector's edition that had, like, the little BB, like, little mock thing and everything. Yeah. And, like, a case, and I thought that was rad. And I literally did spend that money on the Death Stranding 2 collector's edition, even though I know, like, the Death Stranding 1 collector's edition stuff, it's in a box in my garage. I don't have it on display or anything. It's not doing anything. I didn't need to spend that money on it. Yeah. Death Stranding 2, same thing. I don't even know. Is there a statue in that or something? I don't know. But I just know it's, if it's a statue, I might be able to put that out on a shelf. But otherwise, it might just also be just in a box in my garage and all that stuff. Right. But, like, I'm just feel like I'm obligated to. And then to make it worse, I had to buy that collector's edition. It came with a copy of the game. But then I bought my, PS4 Pro, I bought that Death Stranding edition of that came with a copy of the game. Already had a PS4 Pro, so, like, I was already
I already bought that system a second time to go from the PS4 to the PS4 Pro, and then I bought a second Pro just to have that Death Stranding edition of it and everything. It's mounted here in my bedroom. Nice. I'm just a big Kojima nerd. Like,
yeah.
Once I flipped that switch when I was younger and real, I made those connections too. Like, it's like my love of David Lynch. Like, I'm okay with not knowing, but
yeah.
I love that if, like, the more I want to, like, think about it or try and articulate it and, like, you know, pull the threads and all that stuff, I might be able to make some connections there. But at the end of the day, there may not be connections to, like, make.
Right.
There isn't some, like, document somewhere that says, this is what happens in Mulholland Drive, and this is why all these events happen. Like, this is the explanation for you. It's
about,
you know,
the performance, not the notes, you know?
Yeah. It's the entertainment. It's the art. It's like, you know, it is what it is. So what you take away from it is what you're going to take away from it. So there's rad themes. There's rad storylines. There's things that you can pick up on as like a common mind like I am. And there's bigger things and under the surface that maybe I just won't get. But I just really appreciate that all these little fun details and the way it's like laid out there.
There's been a recent like prompt going around Blue Sky about like, what's the time a game made you cry? And every time I'm like, man, I don't want to talk about the end of Death Stranding. I don't want to talk about it again. Because that good Lord, that was like the Futurama Dog episode times 1,000 for me. I was just like, please stop. Please stop. Please don't let it be okay. So yeah, even now I'm like, man, I'm getting like emotional now thinking about it. But yeah, like that game like totally sunk into me. And I enjoy the ride. You know, I'm not necessarily asking, you know, for answers, you know.
Mm-hmm. I love too the argument with folks about like, oh, it's just a walking simulator. You're just, you know, you're UPS, you're taking boxes and all that stuff. I've like tried to frame the game like, the mechanics are all there, but if you just like, oh, you're a wandering spirit and you need to take the souls of like the enemies you've murdered and like deposit them into this like neural network of the planet to give it life. And like, would you play a game like that? Like, sure. Okay. So Substitute that with some, like you're connecting them via like a network and you're delivering resources to people in like these bunkers and shelters. Like it's the mechanic and gameplay of it all. Like you're rewarded with like this resource management, carrot on a stick, you know, too much, too little, like give and take with this like interesting narrative around it all. Like it's a rad game. You can't just reduce it down to like, oh, you're just walking around. It's like,
yeah.
No, you're not. Like there's a lot more like mechanics within that of with you walking around and everything too. So like, you just don't get it. Like just give it a shot. I'm sure you'll like it, but you probably won't play it at all. So, you know, you're a loss. But yeah, I'm with you there. Death Stranding 2. That will be, that's actually pretty soon, isn't it? June something?
I think so. I'm getting a little bit of your feed's cutting. Hopefully, as long as you can hear me, we're okay. But,
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay, good. I think it comes out in June, like next month, from where we're recording, so.
Yeah. Okay, well, hopefully by the time you're listening to this, we're either both hours deep into it, or it's going to be shortly released around this time, so look forward to that. All right, well, let's do some this or that's then, and we'll get rolling. Okay, I remember the one I was going to ask you in the last episode, and it's just going to be really weird to like ask it weeks later and all that stuff, but, you know, connective tissue. Mm-hmm. NBA Jam or Arch Rivals?
NBA Jam. That's a...
Okay.
I don't think I've ever... I think I've seen Arch Rivals. I don't know if I've actually put my hand on the joystick for it, though.
Oh, really? I played it... I remember going like pizza places and stuff like that, like, you know, going to the beach and getting pizza and all that stuff, and... always been able to like find an arcade game or an arcade somewhere that had a copy of Arch Rivals and everything. I played on the NES even a lot. I mean, I of course, yeah, NBA Jam forever. But yeah, even NBA Hangtime, NBA Showtime. I was a fan of all the later versions of those Midway basketball sims for sure. Ooh, I called them Sims.
Well, I was never like a basketball person until I moved to San Antonio like in 94. Then all of a sudden, like I never lived in a market for basketball. Then I was like, okay, cool. I get the Spurs and David Robinson, Sean Elliott, the whole thing. And then like, that's right when the NBA Jam had come out. It was kind of a nice, like, you know, I didn't really look at basketball games before that, but I was a 2K was my jam back before. Like, I guess they're bad now. I was, you know, it's like, eventually you become the villain kind of thing, but like when 2K started with like the Dreamcast through PlayStation 2, the Xbox era, I was huge on that.
Yeah, I loved those games for sure. Cool. Well, you mentioned it earlier, but digital or physical?
Digital. And I'm sure people think that, you know, it's physical is cool and all, but also like I've got space. I need space for other stuff. Mm-hmm. Is the big thing. And like, I've never lost a game digitally. Weird because people are like, oh, they'll take it away from you. I'm like, that's never happened to me.
Yeah. I mean, one day, sure. 20 years from now, yeah. maybe. Where, but like for the good while, I think I'll
still
be pretty
have games
fine.
I bought for the PS. Well, there'll be, hopefully by that point, there'll be another game that will fill that hole in my life.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I'm not hurting for games. Like, I've got games I bought on the PSP I can play now on the mm-hmm. PS Network. So like, yeah, I don't see the big deal about it, honestly. And if it makes you feel better, makes you, you know, you want to have the real thing, good for, more power to you.
Yeah.
But I'm fine just downloading it and moving on with life.
Let's see. Oh, wasn't it? Oh, handheld or on a TV?
On a TV. For sure.
Okay. PlayStation or Saturn?
I think I've touched a Saturn twice. So PlayStation.
Okay.
I think it was maybe Toys R Us kiosk at that best. I look at, like, you know, I love Sega, but that was just kind of like, I'll wait, you know, just personally. Yeah. I know that people, like, you know, it was better for fighters for sure, which was my primary genre at the time. But I had the arcade, so I didn't really necessarily need a Saturn at home. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a cousin who had a Saturn. I remember always wanting to play it. I was a Genesis kid and everything. And like, man, I mean, I had a PlayStation at the time, so I had a lot of games to play and I was having fun.
Yeah.
But he brought it over and he like hooked it up and I was like, really, like, oh, this is going to be great. And we played like the Independence Day game. And I was like, this is just a bad game. Like I wanted something that was going to wow me. Like, what is the Saturn like exclusive that I can like try? And he didn't have anything cool. He didn't have Virtua Fighter or Daytona or anything. It was just Independence Day and something else. And I was like, all right, well, sorry, Saturn. This is your one chance for me to get my hands on you. And you're just, you know, you didn't do it because my cousin sucks.
Well, the one that I was really dying to play because it was exclusive was the Scud, the Disposable Assassin game. Because Scud, the Disposable Assassin, that's like probably my top comic book of all series of all time. Mm-hmm. Rob Schraub is a legend. But I think I played it like at an EB or something. Of all games, they had that on their Saturn demo. Or, you know, kiosk or whatever. And I was like, this game is terrible. Sorry, you know. And that was it. That was my time with the Saturn.
I don't know if I asked you that. Well, I'll do it anyway. Ninja Gaiden or Shinobi?
Ninja Gaiden overall. In fact, I'm sure you can... I think you can see here. Got a statue of Ryu.
Oh, yeah.
Ryu back
That's a
here.
Big one.
That's from the... I think it's from the Black re-release or something, but yeah, that's Ryu Hayabusa is like my dude. I love that character. So he was my second answer for the, you know, character you love thing after Cosmic Kiryu.
Okay.
He's again righteous stoic warrior, you know. I know I can get through a game with him. Same thing with Cosmos. I have a feeling I'm along for the ride, but they're also gonna make sure they're not gonna drop me.
Okay, well, that is this or that, then. We did it. We got through that. I need to come up with some more variety and everything, but I have a pretty good mix there. I think those are always fun. Getting the juices flowing.
Do like a Bubsy or Arrow the Acrobat or something. Like,
yeah. I'll pass on both. I'll just save my choice for a later question so I can
pick
both.
Punky Skunk or Punky Squirrel. It's Punky Skunk. There we go.
Yeah, Punky Skunk. Yeah. And then, so many of those mascot platformers. You know, don't forget Gex.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, let's do the icebreaker then. This will be a fun one. So you've mentioned a lot of them already, the Yakuza, Ninja Gaiden. You've shared a lot of your favorite games already, but tell me, what is, just top of the head, what is one of your favorite games or one of your favorite game franchises?
I'm trying to think, something I've recently purchased for the fifth time. I mean, it's basic, but you know, it's great, the Arkham series. Like, man, I love those games. Like, I'm actually on like my fifth playthrough of Origins right now. Arkham Origins.
Okay, so the Arkham games. Oh, so Batman Arkham Origins, yes. Or Batman Arkham. Okay,
yeah,
so this is going to be interesting.
Like the Gotham Knights, that doesn't count. Suicide Squad, no, that's not real. That never happened. Let's not pretend it did.
They're still recovering from that financially, but yeah.
I had fun with it, to be fair. But like, you know, the whole like spirit of the games, like they're the best character action games that are also sort of Metroidvanias. Like, there's so many things to love about those games.
Yeah.
They're like a comfort food for sure.
Okay. Well, my question wasn't completely finished yet, though. I wanted you to pick that series. So you've got it. You've got Batman Arkham, well, the Arkham series.
Yeah.
Now give it a new title.
Sheesh. man, I could just Dark Knight something. Dark Knight Vanias. There we go.
Dark Knight Vania. Okay. Yeah. All right. That does it. You did it. That
Batman Vanias. Whatever you want to go with there.
I thought for sure you pinned yourself into a corner where it was not going to be easy to rename. You know, because like you can't not have Arkham potentially in the title with where it starts and the importance of the character.
I had to do a callback there. I was like, all right, what can I pull from? So
yeah, but Dark Knight was the good pivot from Batman. Yeah. All right. Well, you did it. Yeah, I love that one. Just, you know, catching somebody off guard with, yeah, this is one of my favorite things. And now you have to rename it without using the same words. Like, oh, no.
Right.
All right. Well, there we go. So let's get into it. This is another one. I mentioned it last episode you were on. That was the first time I asked that question. So at the time of this recording, this is also the first time we are answering this question. I'd be curious to know if somebody else suddenly stealth comes in here and answers it before I air this one. I doubt that will happen. But as an artist, and as me, a fan of art, who is not an artist at all, but a big comic book fan, I love that this is being asked. But who are some of your favorite gaming artists or designers? You know, and then we can talk about some of your favorite character designs of them and like what stands out and makes them special to you. But let's just have a conversation on their process, their art, their style, and what you love about them. But yeah, tell me, who are some of your favorite gaming artists or designers?
So I primarily want to focus on one, and that is, I'll butcher it, but it's Toshiaki Mori, a.k.a. Shinkiro. Shinkiro is SNK to me. He hasn't worked there, you know, 2 decades, but there's few artists I can say that are the house style forever to me for a game series. Maybe like Mobius and Panzer Dragoon is the only other one I would put up there at that level. But his style is not for everybody. Most everybody complains about George Clooney face, or, you know, and he did have a lot of same face itis in the earlier days, but I think I've watched something on him recently, and a lot of his stuff is based off of older Japanese art and Frank Frazetta. And guys of that era, I think SNK's strongest period of character creation really was like before modern anime influence came in. It's Terry is a very masculine, but at the same time approachable character. You know, Kyo is not as masculine, but he still is very powerful. Iori is, you know, bordering more towards feminine, but still a very powerful character, and that's not an easy thing to do. The easiest way to determine that, I would say, or to see the difference, is to look at like the post-KOF 2000 era when like Falcoon was the main SNK artist. And it's way, you could feel like this is a kid who grew up with anime. Shinkiro did not grow up with it necessarily. What we would think of it, you know, the mainstream stuff. He grew up with Golko 13 and Space Adventure Cobra and that era thing. So I think that like you can kind of tell like how his art is flavored, really makes those character designs. I would say there's a term I use from Adam Hughes called naturalistic. He's not realistic. He's close, but you know, there's a little bit of uncanny valley in there. But it feels natural though. Like every muscle is not drawn perfectly, but it's as close as you're going to get, because the second you look away from his muscle, you see the character with like the eyes and the dark shadows around it and all that. You're like, oh, this is a cartoon. But he really nailed that. He also does a lot of like his primary illustration is usually just a single dead line, and it's usually just an outline or containing line. I won't go too into it, but like Windsor McKay, the artist of Sleeping, or Little Nemo in Slumberland, did kind of develop that style. Dave Stevens is a student of that style. My personal style goes from having a containing line, a solid containing line around the character that's the same depth, same width. But he goes in, he doesn't ink or do much. He does all the detail with his color. Like he gives them depth with that. So it really pops off the page. Even like this older, like, you know, like Baseball Stars or stuff like that, you really feel a sense of depth and like just craftsmanship with his work. Also, like he can convey power without doing anything. This image has been my lock screen for 4 iterations of my phone. It's the Fatal Fear, Real About Fatal Fury cover of Geese Howard sitting in the chair.
sorry, a child just like startled me by opening the door and like freaked me out for a second. Then
I was talking about Keith Howard. Kids love Keith Howard.
Yeah, she came running.
But it's like, it's almost like going back to Rosetta. It's like the Conan sitting on the throne feel. It's just Keith Howard, Billy Kane, his other boys standing. And this is the cover of a video game. Nothing. There's no explosions. There's no punches being thrown. It's just Geese Howard looking at you like, "What, son? Like he's in charge." And it's amazing. It's probably my favorite video game image of all time. And that's it. But like, he does such like great work with like casual illustrations of the characters. Like they'll, you know, it's Iori's sitting down on a stoop and he's giving a cat milk. What? This is like this evil dude. But here he is just kind of being a gentle soul to this little kid. Like, that's an amazing image. Keo and his girlfriend kissing each other in Times Square in Christmas in New York. Like, all these images are like, he really made SNK feel like a full-blooded company.
Mm-hmm. Is there, I mean, like, you mentioned, like, some of your favorite things there. Like, is there, like, a favorite, like, era? Like specifically within those years, or like, you know, a favorite piece, you know, that you like always go to. I mean, you mentioned your lock screen already, but like,
yeah. I think that I like the King of Fighters 98 cover because it doesn't make sense. Again, going back to the Real Bout thing, where like it's a cover that would not be out on any other fighting game. King of Fighters 98 was the like a dream match, and it was, you know, all the characters and whoever were in King of Fighters coming together. And instead of a fight, it's them at like a dinner party. They're all just kind of like wearing suits and talking to each other and like getting in the pool, and they're around the catering table. Or, you know, they're like this, they're, you know, getting like off a pulling champagne off of a thing and eating shrimp. It's like, what? This doesn't make, but it's kind of like, it's a celebration of the King of Fighters franchise and showing that, like, kind of like at the end of Altered Beast, where like they kind of take off their mask and like, hey, we're all actors, you know. It kind of like really gave them a lot of personality that made it feel like a family in a weird way. With all they had gone through, that they could still like just hang out and do something, you know, that would be a background in any other fighting game, like Ken's stage in Street Fighter Alpha 2 or something. Like, but that's how the game was sold, which is insane to me. That shouldn't have worked, but it totally did.
Is there a character that you like, you know, from a King of Fighters game, is that like his style is the only way you want to see it? Like you can, when you picture this character, it's always in his style, and like he just nailed it with like a certain design.
Weirdly enough, I mean, part of me says Terry, but I think that like Robert Garcia from the Art of Fighting series, that's the best use of his George Clooney face, I think. His face on the cover of Art of Fighting, the first one, always stood out to me as like, that's like his template. That's like the one that I would say is his example. But I also kind of appreciate too that like his, whenever he would draw the female characters, they weren't overly, like, especially because you've got Mai Shiranui in the game, but she never felt overly sexualized in his hands. Like they were always, there's a realness to her, and people know what to expect with that character. But I never feel like somebody would feel bad looking at a picture of Mai Shiranui in his hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird line. It's an interesting line that he knows how to like not cross. Like he never, like one of my pictures on my laptop is like my wallpaper. It's a Capcom one he had done, and it's all the cap. It's a bunch of heads, like every Mondo poster. And like dead center is Chun-Li, and she's doing like a split kick right at the viewer. And like, yes, you're looking up her junk, but like, I don't feel like I'm actually. That's not the point of the picture. Like, this is an athletic performance. It doesn't feel like it's sexualized in any way. So I think even like his pictures of Morrigan. Like, while they're attractive, they don't feel sexualized. I don't know how he does it, but that could go back to the thing I was saying before about like the older artists being more, they probably approach the more masculine side of things just because that's the era they come up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm scrolling through and looking at like a whole gallery of his stuff. I think personally, I discovered like a really, you know, I mean, I think I always saw it, like, you know, going, like, walking through an arcade or, like, you know, looking at SNK games. I clearly had seen his artwork, you know, numerous times. But Capcom versus SNK, like, on the Dreamcast, yes. Like, when I saw actual like Capcom characters that I am very familiar with, you know, in like a very Capcom-y art style, like now being drawn in a different way and seeing them done like in his artwork, you get like a whole different dimension and a different like, you know, feel from the characters with like his style for sure.
I think too that they revealed that like he only did the one side of it, and the Capcom artists mimicked his style for one of them. I'm blanking on which one that was specifically, but it wasn't like, they basically had a clone. They had an imitator. They had imitators do his style, but it worked. Yeah. It's strange to see like for decades, people thought that he did all of it.
Oh, wow.
That wasn't Kenan Nishimura.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. After his time at SNK, looking here, like he did go in and actually do some work with Capcom. I'm seeing here, like he did the artwork for Dino Stalker, you know, like the Dino Crisis style one. Like I can see that box art in my head, and I immediately like can see that same like King of Fighters style design and like artwork, and also he's very like unique art style, and one that like once you see it, like now I can't unsee it. Like it's jumping out to me, like really, you know, like wow, like I've seen this other places, that Ghost and Goblins, that like remake and all that stuff, you know, it's just neat to see his artwork.
One of the other ones, like with the covers, he did the cover for the Japanese version of PsyOps, the Mindgate Conspiracy. And you can tell because the American one is just like, you know, it's a soldier, blue soldier, whatever. But his one, it told the story of the game. And I think too that like, as somebody who came from comics and somebody who like, you know, I went into record and I do it with the covers and everything. Like I try to tell the story. I try to tell a story whenever I do a single image. And that's very difficult to do. Like he accomplishes that so well on most. Granted, though, a lot of his Capcom work is just collage pieces. But with his SNK work, especially, he would tell the story of the characters. The King of Fighters 97 cover, it's the entire story of the game if you break it down and pay attention. I love that about his stuff.
Okay, then maybe last a question on this then. If you had an afternoon to hang out and be present there, and money wasn't an option or a necessity there, which character would you want to have be like commissioned and drawn, like an original piece for you by him?
It would be interesting to see him do either Ryu Hayabusa or Tina Armstrong, just because I love Tina. That's my favorite character there. But I think that it would be interesting to see him do like Ryu Hayabusa, you know, the muscles rippling, the whole nine yards. He would really understand the ninja quality and bring that out, because I don't think he's ever done anything. He's done some SNK ninjas, but I don't think he's really done much in that aspect. Weirdly enough.
Cool. Yeah, super Ed. I have a couple tabs open of his stuff. I'm gonna just keep reading and keep checking out his artwork.
He's like the best. If you get a new device or you have an old device, he's like the go-to guy for like great wallpapers for anything you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, that's cool. Cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's it. We did it again. We did another episode in the can. I was going to potentially share one of mine, but I think we had like a lot of good conversation, a lot of good info on there. So a future episode for me, one day I'll have I'll share mine. But thank you so much, Rusty, for jumping on and sharing. I know I asked you before, but anything you want to plug, share, promote, hype, anything?
I'm on the Eras of Wrestling game should be coming out hopefully later this year. You'll see my stuff on 1-800-HOTDOG.com, comedy website, Hardcore Gaming 101 from time to time. I'm all over, but just look for me on Blue Sky, Rusty Shackles. You'll see whatever I'm doing currently there, or just one of my silly jokes and japes and shenanigans and antics. People seem to enjoy those. So,
all right. Well, thank you, Rusty. We'll open invite to come back. We'll do more episodes in the future if you want to do it. But appreciate you for coming over and jumping on.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Bye.
The listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.